This is All She Wrote Books. I am your host and owner, Christina. I'm so excited to have Essie and Rhea here this evening. This is so exciting because I discovered your book very, very, very long time ago, Bocheros, at Paper Cuts, actually, as a matter of fact. So if you haven't been to Paper Cuts, check them out. Another great indie in the area. And so when I got the email, I was like, oh, here? Us? Yes, please? Yes. So I'm very excited to have y'all here. This is one of many events that we're doing here over this month as well as next month. So if you haven't checked out our website yet, allshewrotebooks.com/events, all of our June calendar is up, y'all. And there's some pretty epic people that are coming through, both here as well as in our offsite location that's right down the street at Connection. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my amazing author and speaker for the evening slash in conversation partner. So let's start off with the author here. So Rhea is an artist, educator, and author based here in Boston. Rodale has exhibited internationally and throughout the United States as a recipient of the Artadia. Thank you. Award, a Massachusetts Cultural Council Artist Fellowship, and the SMFA Traveling Fellowship. Their work has appeared in New York Magazine, The Guardian, Art News, Boston Globe, and the American Paintings, among other publications. So excited to see these tonight.
Yay!
And now, our lovely In Conversation partner, S.E. Flanagan, is an essayist, cultural critic, fiction writer, and editor. Their words appear in print and online at The Independent, Vice, Electric Literature. There's a lot.
Keep going.
They also teach writing workshops, which is amazing. And they are the co-hosts. They co-host the comics and pop culture podcast, Bitches on Comics. So if you don't already subscribe to that, get on it. All right? As well as being a head writer for the narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel. I did not know that. Now I have to listen to it. And they have many other credentials. I'm not going to go through all of them because they're not going to waste all that time. Without further ado, let's give it up for Rhea and S.E. for tonight. Thank you so much. I'm going to go back in.
Well, I think first we just want to say, yes. Christina, All She Wrote Books, thank you so much for having us. It just, you know, I was like, All She Wrote Books, I got to go figure out what that is because I don't live here. And I was so delighted to see that there's such a focus on queer and trans writers, on women, on people of color, on Black voices. And I hope that everybody will drop some dollars in the All She Wrote bank.
The publisher is always open.
Yes, you can pick up your copy. I don't know why I'm doing sales, but I am. You can pick up your own copy of Butch Heroes. This is mine. You can't have it. I'm going to have it signed. And more Butch Heroes. Christina's doing some beautiful Vanna White work. You might be too young to know who that is, in which case, don't tell me. That hurts my feelings. But I'm just so happy to be here. You may know artists, you may know Rhea, and you may know that many artists struggle to talk about their work. And that's okay, because that's why you have people like me, and that's why I host a podcast. It is called Bitches on Comics, if you missed that. Every other week, we talk to queer and trans creators of comics, pop culture, etc. And in some ways, maybe Rhea's work doesn't match. It may feel like, well, comics, but to us, it's what does visual storytelling look like? And what does visual plus narrative storytelling look like? So I'm in charge of the podcast, so it fits. And that's how that went.
Yeah.
So that's how I met Rhea. I was really lucky to, actually, my mother-in-law is here. You can wave hi to Kathy. Kathy bought me Butch Heroes, the first one. Did anyone else's mother-in-law buy you Butch Heroes? I doubt it. Sorry, mine's better. And it was such a big moment for me. We were, like, sitting around the Yule tree, and I, like, broke the book open, and I just start sobbing. And, you know, Kathy was telling me about why she picked it, and it was just, she wanted me to feel like there were people I could be connected to, both in history, but also artists and creators. So I was just some schmo, y'all. Like, I just read a book and was like, hey, person whose book I read, want to come on my podcast? So that's a reason to start a podcast,
You can email anyone, and they will be like, well, maybe I'll come on your podcast. And that's how we became, yeah. I don't know, are we friends now?
Yeah,
we're friends. Okay, we're friends, right. I should have asked.
This is the first time we're meeting in person.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
Because we met during COVID on
we
the
did.
Podcast.
We
I
did.
Remember I was in Miami, and it was like one of the best conversations I'd ever had about the series. And so then I knew that I wanted you to contribute to the next book. And here we are.
Which is, like, such an honor to me. This is the first time my name's been on a cover. It's not about me, but we're going to take, like, 2 seconds about me. Because it's my birthday. And...
Let's give it up!
Woo! I'm 23. And I am much older than that. And, yeah, you know, it was such an honor. Rhea reached out, and I immediately thought they were asking about coming back on the podcast. And I was like, wait, we're not scheduling yet. When is it coming out? Tell me all the details. And Rhea was like, you're not listening. You didn't read the email. I actually would like to talk to you for the book. So, of course, I had, like, an existential crisis. Like, what am I doing? Being blah, blah, blah. But now it's been over a year we've been working on this together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It feels incredible to be here at the point of print. It looks so good.
Mm-hmm.
These paintings, so you can see them a little bit, but we're also going to put them back here at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Please take some time to check them out. And if you have your copy, you can compare the pages. The fidelity is incredible. And
sure.
I was so pleased to see that in this print. Okay, so I think we've done the preamble, the intro, the let's get their energy excited.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's nervous anymore. Everyone's just excited now. That's the rule. Oh, geez. Okay, so let's start with the how and what.
Yes.
Can you take us through?
Yes.
Yeah. Hand me somebody.
I
want to
hold Johnny.
Okay. I brought two of the paintings because that's how this started.
Yes.
It's a painting series that ended up being a book.
So you're just going to take us through what it's like to create an entry. So
yeah.
Both in terms of what was it like to discover them? How did you discover people?
Yeah.
And then take us through what it took us to what we might call completion. Even if that's not today.
Yeah, so it started way back. I've been doing this for 15 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So it started with a previous series in which I was looking at my childhood and trying to figure out my gender and sexuality by looking at my childhood and all the things I was into, like He-Man and Rambo and G.I. Joe and making little vignette gouache paintings. And at the end of that series, I started to actually wonder about history and future. And I made a painting called Self-Portrait as a Nun or a Monk, circa 1250, because I knew, having grown up Catholic, that like you're supposed to just join a convent or a monastery, right? But then I was like, nah, everybody did that. Like, what did we actually do? And so I started by just going to, I think I started at the Boston College Library, actually, and the Boston Public Library, and just spent a lot of time in the aisles there looking for history books and looking for actual people. Then not knowing really what that would become, once I started to find people, I was like, okay, what do I want to do with this information? Would they be portraits? I made a whole bunch of pieces similar to the past series of vignettes, like I found from the first book. Can I borrow yours?
Yes, you may.
I found Antonio Arauso, this person here. And so I've got a few paintings where we're like sword fighting together and sitting on a bench exchanging that like best friend necklace that everybody had in the 80s and 90s. And and I was like, that's not what I want to do. I don't want to do that. And then I brought these for y'all to look at, too. This is my collection of holy cards, because I remembered these that I grew up with. I guess we could pass them around if you want. And they were super special to me. My aunts shared them with me and told me the stories of all these people. And that's, it clicked. Like, it was like, okay, I want to use that format. I mean, obviously larger, because I wasn't going to lose my eyesight painting that small. did like they're 2.5 times the size, and so I formatted them in the style of that, like pretty loosely. Some of the others have more elaborate borders, but that's where the banners kind of come from and the gold borders that all of them have. So I settled on portraiture and very quickly knew that I needed to include all the research I was finding. So that's how it became a book. because the stories were like super interesting, and I wanted all my source material. I wanted to share all of that with folks so that they could also do more research, because there's a lot out there. So once I would find a person, then it was all about like finding all the facts, like whatever facts I could find. So how, you know, what were their names? Many people use multiple names. What were the dates? Verifying the dates is sometimes kind of difficult. What did they do? What were their jobs? Did they have partners? Did they have pets? Like what, all that nitty gritty stuff is like the best part, like making their lives visible. And putting it all together was like amazing. Like it was so much fun to like go into like the research from, you know, the clothing they're wearing and the things that they carry, the textiles and like the backgrounds and the cities or the natural landscape that I got to switch back and forth to. So, it was super fun. And then, yeah, so like I find the person, I do all that research. I start the painting after making a bunch of sketches to decide like how I want to portray them. Sometimes they're doing their job and sometimes it's like a certain event that happens in their life that is important. Sometimes they're just chilling. Yeah. Then it's making the painting. And then I usually save the writing for after the painting's done. Mm-hmm. I have like a list of bullet points of like the important parts of the narrative that I want to put into the visual representation. And then I'll flesh it out. So, yeah, that was a long answer.
Well, no matter how many times I get to hear you talk about the process, and it's been a few, it is always interesting to me the points where you kind of pause and lean in a little bit. The details. That's something you've brought up every time I've talked to you. You've been like, the details are what excite me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking particularly, you know, we talk about it a little bit more at length more in the end of the book, but Esther Eng and working on the San Francisco... the facade of the Chinese theater in San Francisco. Can I pass this to you?
Yeah.
In San Francisco, and you found the manual to her camera so that you could draw the camera right.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just the kind of nerding out in history.
Yeah.
That even if you know maybe your subjects were someone else, would still be present. But to do it for the lives of queer and trans people feels so magical.
Yeah, here's Esther. Yeah. This one, Sarah can attest. I almost quit.
It's pretty detailed.
There were a couple that almost made me quit because all this stuff, I'm not a big fan of drawing architecture and so or things in perspective, and so all of these fire escapes and the signage, my sister-in-law Eva helped me with the signage back here because she speaks and reads Mandarin and I do not, but yeah, it was incredible. But yeah, nerding out on like what the license plates on cars looked like in California at this time, and then finding out what the color of the facade actually looked like at that time. That was hard, but I did. I think I got it. So,
I mean, I approve. I'm sure that's the only thing you were waiting for, so now you know. Good, great. We can put that to rest. Just kidding. You know, when I was reading More Butch Heroes this morning, spending my birthday with a cup of coffee, and the birds... I played the birds for Rhea. Rhea loves birds. If you have questions at the end, feel free to ask questions about birds.
Yes.
Or frogs. Frogs are also on the docket.
I don't know much about frogs yet, but yeah.
Well, maybe we'll learn together.
Okay.
Okay. It could be more of a comment if it's about frogs, but otherwise it needs to actually be a question. But when I was rereading More Butch Heroes this morning, it stood out to me so much that the portraits and biographies you've created, they form an intimate connection between the reader and the subject. And it's much more intimate than it would be if it was just a painting or just the biography.
Mm-hmm.
Integral on their own, but together, something so much more. Perhaps this intimacy is due to the use of that direct, almost confrontational gaze that really is from those Saint cards, that mischievous defiance.
Mm.
Perhaps it's because a trans researcher took the time to care about the details. Perhaps that's part of why we connect with them. It's probably both and a bunch of other things I'm not saying right now because, you know, that's for another day. But, you know, it's made me really think about what is it about bringing people to life in both art and words that makes us connect with them when and empathize with them when centuries are between us in some cases. And I'm going to do as we talked about. I'm going to combine it with my next question. So let's see how artful I can do this. It makes me think of, that's not part of the question, Kathleen and Frankie. You know, they're both people who appear in More Butch Heroes, the new volume. And they're both subjects of sex variance. I don't know how many people are familiar with that, but it is a study that originated as a queer run and queer focused study under Jan Gay, but ultimately didn't remain in queer hands. And Bazaar did a really, these are awesome. And you get into sex variance a little bit in each of their, I think Kathleen's the one before too. And you know, Bazaar did a really great feature. For those of you who don't know more about this, you can learn about Jan Gay there. It's really awesome. Go ahead, Bazaar, do something cool. And you can find that online. But the study ended up producing less than empathetic representations of queer and trans people, relying on problematic stereotypes, criminality, much worse things that I won't say. And that analysis got bogged down in that. So we do, we have this, this scientific record, right, of the existence of Kathleen, of Frankie, of so many others. But it's through this, it's been filtered through this cis-heteropatriarchal lens. Mm-hmm. And so it means what we're left with is, isn't really as close to maybe the heart of those people as we would argue that you could be. And their treatment in More Butch Heroes is the opposite. I feel incredibly close to Kathleen. I feel incredibly close to Frankie. I can see the joy in their faces and their defiance, their willingness to live out in the open, a life that so many people, even to this day, want to take from people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of the question is, like, why is art so cool? Which is not a question you can answer today. But the bigger question is, what do you think the role of the artist, and as you as an artist, is in preserving the history of what the lovely Chris E. Vargas, who wrote an amazing foreword, I hope you'll all read it, what Chris called the under-historicized. So what is your role as an artist in preserving the under-historicized?
Yeah, I'm only going to speak for myself.
Yeah. Yo, you have to speak for all artists everywhere.
Tons of artists. But I think when you're asking that question, I'm thinking of like the reasons I started to include those that were unnamed. Like, I came across this story and at first I did not include them in the series. I came across Johnny and didn't include them in the series at first because I had this certain criteria that I wanted to keep it personal to myself. And so one of those criteria was like actually finding out their name or the names that they went by, because it meant that like they, for me, it meant at the time that they were a real person, right? That they were fact. And I, after reading like Sex Variance and after finding so many other people in these archives that are left unnamed, whose stories are just little blips, I realized how important it is to include them as well, because they're a representation of like how many people didn't make it into the archives. Like, didn't, there's just so, I know that there's so many more people who just live their lives as they pleased and don't make, you know, many of the people I could find, I found because they were punished or because they participated in a study like Sex Variance, or, you know, they were put on trial, or they were just seen as like an oddity in their town. And so they got put in the paper. And
a lot of deathbed discoveries.
Yes, deathbed discoveries, that kind of thing. So like including the unnamed became very, very important to me. And I think the role of an artist in that way, like taking with Sex Variance in particular, is a very difficult book to read. And Jan Gay, when it came out, was frankly super pissed off because what she had started as a loving project became a medical text. And that's not how she wanted it to be, but that was a product of the times. So I had to parse through there and find their voice. And that's what I tried to do consistently through both books, is just listen to the people I was depicting. Try somewhere to find, like, what did they think of their experience? What are they trying to feel what they're experiencing? And I think as an artist, like, making that visual and making that, be able to empathize with like what used to be just text what used to just be stats or a quote, if I can add visuals to that. And for me, the more detailed it was, the more I could flesh out what their life potentially looked like. And I know it's not, you know, it's my rendition of it, but if I can like show that to people, it personally, it makes me connect to their story and their lives more. It makes it more real to me, the experience of like, you know, being able to depict a person like at the loom doing their job when I know like the next day they're hung, you know, like that, like depicting that moment before is really poignant for me. And so if I could convey that in the imagery, I feel like you can then make the story more real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you're a fan of the podcast and want to hear even more excellent interviews, get sneak peeks into everything else we're up to, and be the first to know what's up with the lovely bitches, we hope you'll join us on Patreon at patreon.com/queerspec, where we already have hundreds of bonus episodes and other content and add more every month. Usually.
That's true. This is Lamacho. Lamacho's my hero. A person who broke all the rules, defied convention, and giggled while doing it in a way that just really pissed people off. But they couldn't figure out how to classify Lamacho, and so they couldn't figure out how to punish Lamacho. And I think that's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. But yeah, really, it was like they got caught in the bureaucracy between the Catholic Church and the city. And unfortunately, they ended up sitting in prison while they figured it all out and ended up not figuring it out and then just put them in prison for a few years. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't figure out, like basically Lamacho's story was super fun. Like they were dressed in male clothing and it was like Holy Monday. So it's like the day after Easter Sunday. And there's a procession like of, you know, around the church in Mexico City, I think the cathedral there, yeah. And for that, I got to look inside the cathedral. So they were doing the procession, and Lamacho was at the mass, dressed in male clothing, and they take communion, but then they take the Eucharist out of their mouth after receiving communion and, like, laugh and run out of the church, which is, like, not what you're supposed to do. So they chase after Lamacho to try to get them, but then they don't find him for a while until they find Lamacho, like, the procession's going on, and they find Lamacho blowing out the candles of the people that are participating in the procession as they walk by, and I was like, this person rocks. And so the Catholic Church was like, okay, we have to figure out who this person is and why they're doing this and look into them and see if they're a good Catholic. And it turns out they were a super good Catholic. Mm-hmm. They contributed to the church all the time. They like participated in mass in their community and stuff. So they're like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. They're not sacrilegious or anything. But through interviewing their neighbors, they found out that they had a, what was the word they used? Like basically inclination towards women. So they were like, well, we don't know what that is, so we'll put it to the city. The city will figure this out. But then the city didn't have a precedent for it. And so the city was like, it's not our jurisdiction. And the Catholic Church was like, it's not our jurisdiction either. And so it just, she was just caught in limbo.
Yeah. So. Which is like not exactly hopeful, but it is pretty funny to like screw with the two biggest organizations, institutions, hellscapes, let's say, in your life by being like,
I forget what
game do I really love God, you know? Like, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and it sounds like Lamacho was kind of like all of the things. Like, they were queer and trans and also Catholic and devout. And I think I like that, even though I'm not Catholic anymore. It's like still important to me. Yeah, 1796. So it's cool.
One of my favorites for sure. You know, when you look at both volumes together, it's kind of incredible. You've really documented the kind of lives transgender and non-binary, gender non-conforming, and queer people can have. And they're multitudinous. You know, we're hunters, parents, cowboys, or cowpokes. I don't know. Cowgirls, maybe. Soldiers, prophets, leaders, farmers, chefs, filmmakers, rabble-rousers, troublemakers, truth-tellers. Rabble-rouser right there, you. I love you. And so much more, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you talked a little bit about in this new volume, discussing historical figures who remained unnamed at the time of you writing it. And I was wondering if you could talk, you know, a little bit more about why you, as a researcher, found that they were unnamed and how including them in the scope has broadened what more Butch Heroes is talking about.
Yeah, my guess, and from when I looked into it, like why people were left unnamed, there was an author that I think I found, now I'm blanking because it was a while ago. They were writing specifically about California and the use of like not naming people to create like kind of a broad generalization or conglomerate. It was basically racism and sexism and all of that. And that made it even more important for me to name them. Or not name them, but to like put them into the series.
That's Claire Sears.
Yes,
the book is Arresting Dress, Cross-Dressing, mm-hmm. Law, and Fascination in 19th Century San Francisco.
It's a super good book, yeah. And at that point, there were so many people. I think I list some of them because I had so much information. I was like, I don't know who of these people to paint, but it was like really exciting to like be able to put that together and like, because sometimes it's like, it could be like when I was doing the research for these folks, the unnamed Inuits from what is now Alaska, like the ethnographer was just, I don't think he even cared. So that's why their name wasn't written down, you know? So it's that, but it's probably also a lot of other things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's something we've talked about that is, we won't spend too long on it because it is heavy, is that the work of recreating these lives, these biographies, involves wading through a lot of really intense stuff,
mm-hmm.
reading about horrific punishments done to people like us, reading about horrible things happening between people. You know, there's like some real messy queers in some of these that I'm like, oh, girl, you gotta stop fighting in public. You know, oh, I can see why you got in trouble.
Partners.
People who are like, well, she didn't. And you're like, maybe not in the court. But you know what? Different strokes. But, you know, I think I'm curious for you when you think about confronting that, let's just name it, transphobia, racism, xenophobia, homophobia in the work, what kept you going? Whiskey!
In the beginning, it was just like, I need to make as many of these paintings. Like, it was just like the need to like get it out there.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to know what our history was. And it was just like, do this. And I just couldn't stop doing it. And then after a certain point, I was like, you know what? It's hard. Like, I want to focus on other things. I want to be outside and find joy in birds and frogs because this is hard and it's even harder now, which sucks. There were times when I was making some of these paintings and I would talk to friends and be like, this feels like it's irrelevant now, you know?
Mm.
And now that's just so not the case anymore.
Yeah.
Like it's even harder now. Yeah.
It would be lovely for it to be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
It really
was. There was a blip when I thought that.
Those halcyon days of the early tens. You know, I think I have just one more question and then I get to make my own comment. Thank you very much. But before we do that, I just want to talk about, will you hold up Johnny again?
Oh, sure.
I just want to read something from Johnny Williams and it's in his own words. For those of you who haven't had a chance to read it yet, Johnny shared his story with Golden City Post, a South African newspaper, and I think around 1956, that's at least what I'm seeing real quick,
mm-hmm.
and he talked about his whole life and how he was always a man, how he tried to be right in some ways, and he just couldn't get there, and he said in the magazine Drum, "My earnest prayer each night is that God would be merciful to me and change me completely into a man. If it could be done by any operation, I would gladly risk it, as no pain could be too severe if it meant the fulfillment of my desire."
Mm-hmm.
And I think Johnny speaks to you and me, particularly as we think about the right to bodily autonomy for trans people, as we think about the right to use
the massive beauty that is science to make our bodies ours and the way that we want them to be. And I think sometimes people think that's a new thing.
Yeah.
I think they think we could all trans each other. And I mean, I wish I would love to trans some people. But apparently that's not appropriate. So I won't trans anyone here. But you know, it's silly when you hear it, right? Like, oh, it's contagious. It's whatever. But this is 1956 South Africa. Like Johnny and I never met.
Oh yeah.
It's different existences. And we have the same heart.
Yeah.
That tells me so much about what it means to be queer and trans and about our ability to dream things that aren't real, mm-hmm. to dream of an operation that Johnny may not have known was even possible, but to be like, no, if there was an operation, I would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that imagination, I think, is what has kept us alive. And I hope it'll keep most of us alive.
Yeah, I think that's what I liked. Like, Johnny's story just resonated a lot. And, like, that's why I started this project, is I wanted to, like, I just needed those stories, you know? Like,
yeah.
We need our representation. And, yeah.
Yeah, we do. We do. Okay, without getting too personal, unless you want to talk about personal favorite birds, I'd love to hear about how Butch Heroes and More Butch Heroes have impacted your life as an artist, as a researcher, mm-hmm. a trans person. Just a human.
Yeah, I think that's pretty easy. I mean, it's like what we all needed, you know? Like, we need to know our history. We need to know that we know deep down we've always been here. Like, we've always existed all over the world throughout the centuries. But, like, for whatever reason, I needed that. And this proved that to me. And I learned a lot about myself, mostly in that I don't have to fit into any boxes. Like, I can just be me, because all of these people just did their own thing and they found their way to, like, make their lives. And that was really necessary for me to see. Yeah.
And they found ways to be in partnerships and throuples and to, I love the throuple. They were also messy from book one. I love that throuple. They are a mess. Yeah. And it's perfect. And you know, I'm like, yes, I too am a mess. Wonderful. Let's all be queer messes. It's delightful. But you know, I think that taking the time for each paint stroke, for each mm-hmm. letter on each page, that is the testament. That is the work, right? Like, oh God, I didn't know I was going to go on an AI rant, but here we go. You know,
we're going to talk about AI.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get an AI. Oh God, in Boston, what's going to happen? I'm going to get in a fist fight. No, I hope not. You know, at a time when people are, and you know, late stage capitalism, it's not new. It's just how quickly we can do it. People want quick, quick, quick. They want their quick art. They want their quick stories. Yeah. They want it yesterday. I mean, I'm hearing stories of people who are having fans of their work, they're, you know, releasing it chapter by chapter, and someone's feeding it through ChatGPT to see what their next chapter will be.
What?
And it's just
That's
devastating.
A thing?
Yeah. Oh, it's just devastating.
Yeah.
And so I think it can feel like content,
yeah.
content. I feel like I'm in an episode of Futurama sometimes, of just like, everything is in my face all the time. The future is as bad as I thought it would be. And I think to take the time to do something so meditative, even for a period of time, and then to set it down, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a better love letter to queer and trans people.
Hmm.
I can't think of one.
Thanks.
And that's just, for me, I just, thank you. I was lost when I found the first Butch Heroes, and it told me that I wasn't actually lost, that I knew who I was, and that I wasn't alone. I was part of a huge, huge lineage
mm-hmm.
of queer and trans people who would use some of the labels we would use, would use none of the labels we would use, wouldn't even have a concept of cisgender.
Yeah.
And that makes me like, well, fine. I mean, I'm not going to die today.
This is only like, well, how many paintings did I make? I don't remember, but like 34 or 40 of them. So there's like more. I have more that I didn't paint.
More. And you have to stop somewhere.
There's a lot more.
Yes.
There's tons and tons and tons of people out there.
And that's the beautiful part. That's the like encouragement. There are tons of us out there, and there always have been.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to preach just a little bit, and then we'll do Q&A.
Okay.
It's not really. I'm just being funny. Well, or maybe I'm not being funny. I don't know. You'll decide. So the archive and projects that pull from it, like More Butch Heroes and Butch Heroes, serve as an anchor to history. They're our connection to the past. And I hope that everyone who's queer and trans in this room will treat that as a starting place, as a foundation that you build on every day, just by being alive. You don't have to go be perfect or good or anything. Just be yourselves. And your job as queer and trans people, I'm going to give you a job. Your job is to be defiantly queer and trans, to dare to love yourself no matter what the world says about you, no matter what your communities say about you, and to live like La Macho, like Kathleen, like Frankie. Just go live. You don't have to carry the world. Allies! No. Your job is to put your asses on the line for queer and trans people and nothing less. Thank you for being here with us. If anyone has questions, we will take them.
Yes, questions.
Thank you. Absolutely. If you ask a question, I am recording. If you don't want to be recorded, you can either not ask a question or I can turn it off. Just let me know.
Also, I brought these. They were originally, I don't know where they came from. Some of them MIT Press made and some of them got made somehow, but if you all want some cards, I'll pass them around.
Feel free to take multiples because I have a whole bunch of them.
If you're enjoying the podcast, we hope you'll take a moment to rate and review us on your favorite platform. Give us 5 stars and say something like, "These are the best bitches in the world and they're also the smartest." These are friendly bitches. Don't be afraid of these bitches. Give them a listen. Many platforms allow you to rate and review, so please take a second to rate and review us now. That is so funny. I can't believe you've said, "Don't be afraid of these bitches." That's great.
Yeah, the period where there were female husbands and deathbed discoveries, like in the 1800s, England, lots of people.
Was that because there was more documentation available?
Yeah, more documentation. It became popular because of a play that was written called The Female Husband, and so there was a lot of reporting. And then through that, like that kind of led over into here, like into the U.S., there was a lot of other deathbed discoveries and... Yeah, I would say it was pretty easy to find folks, Europe and USA, like 1800s.
Mm. And then a small follow-up. What's the earliest documentation, and then what did you find to be related?
Yeah, the earliest one, can I borrow your book
yep.
again? Was Katharina Hetzeldorfer in 1477. That was as far back as I could find. And they might have used another name, but this was the only name I could find. And there might be earlier ones, but at this point when I was painting, in fact, I know there were early ones, but at this point I was still fixated on having a name. So 1477 was the earliest that I found, Germany.
Can you talk about them? Because they're pretty cool.
Man, I have to remember. I mean, I could read it, I guess.
I read it this morning.
You read it this morning?
I read it this morning.
That was one of the first ones I made.
So, Katharina was drowned in the Rhine for a crime that had no name at the time.
Yeah, they had no
so
idea.
So, Katharina
was
married to a woman, and I believe that's the case. Yep.
Yep.
But was like, "Oh, that's my sister." And then they were like, "That's not your sister." And Katharina's like, "Good point. She's not my sister. Sometimes we have sex." And her sister, her wife was like, "No, we don't." And she was like, "Okay, I didn't know we were lying together." And then a bunch of witnesses came in and were like, "She is amazing in bed, and you should see this contraption she has."
Yep.
And the contraption made the painting.
Yeah. But what was interesting about Hetzeldorfer is because they didn't think of it, they didn't really think of it as a crime. The sexual part was like, whatever. It was the gender transgression. It was the fact that Hetzeldorfer acted like a man, according to the testimony, like acted like a man, was seen as threatening, wore male clothing. It was that part that got them put to death.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was this in Gertrude? I recognize this. Is this like a lit mag? This painting?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. I was looking at this not like a couple weeks ago. I did a magazine project.
Oh, that's
for,
cool.
And you looked at that for inspiration. So that is so funny.
That's awesome.
It's great. So I guess that's not a question. Well, it was a question.
An observation.
Cool. It's great. I like it.
That was a fun one. That's one of my favorite paintings. So it was just like, it was just a lot of watercolor.
Mm.
So.
Do you usually work in watercolor?
No,
gouache?
It's gouache. It's gouache, but I could treat it like very flowy. It was fun. I remember painting that in my kitchen.
Hmm.
Can
you tell us a couple of names that were given to dildos at the time?
Yeah. Sarah and I made a zine about this. Lifeless instrument.
Yes.
Artificial organ.
Oh, they're so good. There's so many in here.
Oh my God, there's so many. That's why we made a zine. Because we just had to document all the different names and euphemisms for the sex objects. What the hell? I still have those zines.
I do.
One of my favorite messy queers is Big Ben.
Yeah.
Big Ben's like not even involved in
no,
like what
I
goes
know.
Down.
Yeah, Big Ben is just a tragedy.
But he was quite a lover, is what I've learned from reading between the lines. So
yeah.
I like him because he's like, I'm not trying to get part of this. Like,
yeah, there was just a fight.
Two women were really fighting over him, and one of them did not walk away.
Yeah.
So 1926. If you time travel back, look for Big Ben. I've heard good things.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Criteria that you have for selection of people?
That's a good question. I didn't actually say that. So in the beginning, again, like because it started as an art project, I was just trying to find people like me. So I literally just went off of who was like me. So assigned female at birth, presented in a more masculine way, which is kind of a wide thing in my view. And then in the beginning, it was also like relationship status. Like I wanted to figure out like what their relationship status was. But then in the new book, I was like, fuck relationship status. No, I'm still like who I am without having a partner, so it doesn't matter. And so I shifted it up a little bit, but yeah.
It's also before.
Oh, yeah, and I wanted to go before the 20th century.
Yeah.
Because I wanted people who were like really forgotten and weren't documented well. Like, I gave that up a little bit because there were people whose lives I found super, super interesting and wanted to include. Like, Esther Eng was like, you know, died in 1975. But I didn't know Esther Eng existed.
But most
so.
Of the history around Esther, the stuff that I've read, is all talking about her as a chef or a filmmaker,
right.
But not as a genderqueer chef and filmmaker,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Totally.
And that's,
yeah.
I think, a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it did have that specific criteria. That's a good question. Yeah.
I'm curious about your research methods. You say, like, people, finding people who have little documentation versus a lot of documentation. Curious about, like, if you had any trouble accessing that documentation, but, like, archives
to
online
research. Yeah, lots of online research. Sometimes going to places, libraries, newspaper archives, other physical archives. The biggest problem was paywalls and needing help with translation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, getting, like, access to, because I, like, once I get on a thing, I, like, really want all the stuff now. Like, so having to, like, wait for, like, help or, like, yeah, wait to find access. But luckily I'm in academia, so I could, like, usually find someone who could give me access to some sort of institution if it was a certain archive that was under a paywall or... and then I have friends who, like, can help with translation and, like, get me, you know, access to stuff, too, so... Yeah, but it was a lot of different places. Yeah.
Well, and I think between the two volumes, you probably name drop like 12 archives in Boston. Like you were at Harvard.
Maybe not in
you
Boston.
Were,
oh well, yeah, libraries.
Like you,
stuff, yeah.
So libraries, I should say,
yeah,
as well as archives.
Yeah,
yeah. I guess they're different. But yeah, like it's clear that there was a lot of physically going places as well as online.
Yeah,
yeah. Which is librarians. I sure like them.
Yeah, but it would definitely be a different project. If I was making it like without the internet, yeah, it would be much harder. So, yeah.
I wanted to ask you about
like the relationship with the idea of an archive, you kind of talked about it a bit, like the things that are left out of archives for several different reasons,
mm-hmm.
some good, some bad, and I can sense like there is like a part of the project that seems like a little bit like fuck the archive, like we'll make an archive, but another side you're like, but I also want to see what's on the archive because I want to like resurface the archive. Not really a question, but you could talk a bit about that tension, if it exists as a tension.
Yeah, I think there's tension there. Like, sometimes, I think if I'm understanding, like, yes, like, I want the archive to exist, but I also want the archive to exist in a certain way. Like I could look at the Sex Variance book as a part of our archive, because there's so many people in that, but it's a really fucked up archive. Or I could look at the way Johnny, like I would find these newspaper articles, that's how I found Johnny, and they're just really like Johnny says multiple times what name they want to be referred to as, and it's just always using their former name. And so in a way, like, that's the reason I decided to include Johnny, is because I wanted to correct the archive and list them as Johnny Williams. So there's some times where, yeah, the archive is problematic. But I'm also grateful that it exists anyway, you know, so that there's a record there. But I also think about, like, how are we creating archives now? Like, thankfully, like, we got done with review boards, and I met with a ton of students, queer students, that are actually actively keeping archives of their lives and their friends' lives and all the things that they do. And, you know, I think that's really important right now, especially.
I think I saw it on here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. This is a two-part question. Top three birds that you would pick as your favorite. Out of those three birds, who would win in a big bird fight?
So can you repeat the question for folks back here?
Sorry. Top favorite birds,
okay.
Three of them. Okay. And if there was a bird fight, which one would win?
Okay.
Is it a three-way bird fight?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, top three favorite birds, they all get thrown in the, what do we call them? The Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Who's coming out on top? Yeah. Top three favorite. Okay.
This is tough. I mean, I was just talking to a friend. I like the kind of basic birds. Like, I really love a toucan.
Okay. That's not basic.
It is,
yeah.
Because it's not like a hard little warbler to find. It's just like a big-ass colorful bird.
I can see that one.
I really love them. They sound the cute little turkey.
An important bird.
The cute little toucan also sounds like a frog, so that's a bonus.
That is a bonus.
Yeah. That might be my favorite bird at the moment. This is hard because the other day a scarlet tanager just popped into our backyard, and I was just like, what? Like, you just came up here from South America, and now you're right here. It's just so amazing. And so, but I don't like to think of them fighting. I don't know.
Okay, it's a rat battle.
But the other day I saw two chickadees that were just...
Oh, chickadees.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
Fighting over birds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'm going to say the toucan wins. I'm voting for the toucan. It's going to kick the
toucan
tanager's ass.
The toucan is, like, omnivorous, so.
Yeah, well, see? Be careful, tanager. You could be dinner.
I
pretend
to be a frog.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
New game plan.
There we go. Super trans.
Yeah, that's super bad.
Anyway.
We probably have time for another question, if anyone has one.
Yeah, one more.
One more, go for it.
So, wow, what do your parents do since
they raised
a Catholic?
It was a good one!
Yeah, there's always
I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah. My mom loves it. My mom is all about it. My dad still wants me to be Catholic. You know, I don't know if I'm as doomed as my sister, but... she thinks she's doomed, but...
So your mom, like, flexed it?
Yeah. It's a tough... It's been a tough thing, especially with extended family, but I don't know how to get into that question without maybe being me, so yeah, it was tough, but it's better now. Yeah, it took some time, though. It definitely took some time.
Also, grew Catholic in that, so yeah. Mm.
Well, Rhea, I just, you know, on behalf of everybody here, whether they like it or not, I want to say thank you so much for putting yourself through this incredible but difficult, painstaking 15-year project.
Thanks.
And personally, thank you for letting me be a part of the concluding chapter. It's,
of course.
It's definitely a feather in my cap, and also, like, I don't know, what else is there better to do than this? Like, this is all I want to do. So thank you so much. Christina, thank you so much for having us here.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Bitches on Comics is a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Blue Sky at Bitches on Comics. You can sign up for our newsletter, listen to any of our episodes, find curated lists of where to start listening, read interviews available nowhere else, and learn about our other projects and upcoming appearances at bitchesoncomics.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also buy us a coffee or send us a one-time morale boost at ko-fi.com/queerspec. That's ko-fi.com/queerspec.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Essie Fleenor, and you can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Blue Sky at essiefleenor. You know, the whole thing.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at my website, Audrey's Revenge Film, listed below. Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
If you like Bitches on Comics, you might also enjoy our narrative fiction podcast, Decoded Horror Channel, available wherever you get your podcasts or at decodedpride.com.
Be sure to check out our show notes to find a link to donate to campaigns engaged in important work.